See anything you like?
Have you all got amnesia? They just cheated us!
It was a shark.
Little pig, let's come in.
We all go a little mad sometimes.
What was living behind that boy's eyes was purely and simply evil.
I'm just gonna bash your brains.
Welcome to the CineScare podcast. I am one of your hosts, Matt Speak.
And I am also one of your hosts, Joe Jans.
And we have a big announcement, Joe. With us again, this time is huge, Catherine Horan, who is actually going to be joining us on a permanent basis in 2 weeks. Yeah, 2 weeks, because next week is our big anniversary celebration. We already have a full slate of people, but when we come back, I guess it'll be mid-October, she'll be joining us on a permanent basis. So welcome to the show, Catherine. And with us, as always, starting last week, is the super fan. And Joe, I know we talked about this. He's got a brand new title. What is that title, Joe?
Bag boy?
No, it was assistant to the hosts. Ah, congratulations, yes. Joe. Or Mark, congratulations. Assistant to the hosts.
Assistant.
Yeah.
Wow.
Not assistant host. Assistant to the host.
To the host. Assistant to the traveling secretary.
To the host.
Yeah.
All right.
Not host. Hosts. There's two hosts here, right?
Host.
One of these days we'll have to get around to addressing our intern.
That's true.
We should interview our intern one of these days.
Yeah.
Who's the intern?
Yeah. That guy.
Don't worry about
some,
it, Mark.
He gives a lot of good information.
He does a lot of work
too.
On the back end, yeah.
Yeah, he does. Yeah.
Jeez Louise.
Finds all of her facts for us.
All
and
the
if you're
secrets.
Interested in an internship at CineScare Productions,
we are
just
hiring.
Give us an email. Yeah, we are hiring.
Yep.
For I mean,
drop your resume off at Nakatomi Plaza in downtown Los Angeles.
As with any wonderful internship, it doesn't pay anything, but.
No. As a matter of fact, we may borrow money from you from time to time.
We might. Could you spot me a 20? So
if you've got deep pockets, please apply now.
I'm a little light today. All right. Joe.
Matt.
Coming at you. What did you watch recently?
Oh, I watched some stuff. They put out some stuff and I watched it. First off, I watched The Naked Gun, 2025, mm-hmm. Leslie Nielsen.
Oh, how was it?
I thought you were going to say the new one.
I just did. The 2025 Leslie Nielsen, Naked Gun.
It's not Leslie Nielsen.
It's not Leslie Nielsen.
I'm sorry. Liam Neeson.
Spit it out.
Their names are very similar.
Yeah. Liam Neeson,
yes. Leslie Nielsen back from the dead. Leslie Nielsen and Liam Neeson. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh.
The man's dead, Joe.
I dug him back up, put him in front of a camera. It's funnier that way. So anyway, I watched Liam Neeson in the 2025 update, I guess, of Naked Gun. Mm-hmm. If you're a fan of the original movies, please watch this. It was very funny. I don't know that I would say hilarious, but it follows the same models as all the other previous movies, as well as Police Squad, the short-lived six-episode TV show. And there
are
some
fantastic,
which is absolutely phenomenal. I have watched all of them,
yeah,
several times. There is a running gag throughout this entire movie where that someone off screen just keeps handing him cups of coffee and it never gets old. I think the entire cast actually did quite well, trying to get that original, sense of humor out of them. Pamela Anderson was very good. And, Walter Hauser was, actually, in my opinion, he wasn't utilized enough. but still, it was very good. So I highly recommend that one. I watched Jurassic World Rebirth.
Oh boy.
And I don't know why they keep making these.
Yeah.
And I would think, especially after this one, they're probably going to say, yeah, all right, I think we should probably be done. It's not good. As a matter of fact, and I know this, I don't even consider this to be a spoiler. They're not even going after dinosaurs anymore. They're mutant dinosaurs.
Oh, God.
So they might as well just be going to Kaiju Island.
Yeah.
So that one, I would definitely say take a pass on. I finally got to complete my series and I watched Mission Impossible, The Final Reckoning. Now,
I'm so sorry, Joe.
Well, hang on. It's not terrible. Now, I've never been a fan of sequels or movies that are like a large portion of the movie is just clips from earlier films. We've discussed this previously. They do that quite a lot in this one. Like, hey, remember episode one or remember movie number six? And they could have cut all that out and this movie would have been so much shorter and much more enjoyable. However, the stunts are still tremendous. And there's one in particular, the airplane one is the big one that's always on the trailer that everybody sees. It was fine. I'm more of a fan of all of the underwater work that he went through. Oh my God. I'm on the edge of my seat when I watch it. But I kind of liked it. I'm glad I saw it. I mean, I kind of had to because I've seen all the others. I was a big fan of all the previous movies. So then I watched Together.
Yeah.
Which Dave Franco, Alison Brie, we talked about that last episode.
Yep. Yeah.
Tremendous film. I really liked it. It's just, this is body horror at its finest. I don't know why somebody didn't just hand this over to Cronenberg, but I don't know. I highly recommend this one. This is, the cast was great. There's not much of a cast, but it's really good. People should watch this.
Yeah, good movie.
Then I went to the movies and I went to go see The Conjuring Last Rites, and it was good because I was really tired and I could use a nap, and I fell asleep twice during it.
Oh boy.
I hated this movie. I've never been a big fan of the Conjuring series. I've never been a big fan of the whole ghost storyline. And this was just utter nonsense in my opinion. And at the end, there's a scene where they're bringing back past cast members from other movies in the Conjuring universe. And I was just bored off my ass watching this one.
Yeah.
I know I don't speak for everybody. Matt, you probably like this. If you haven't seen it, you'd probably love it.
Well, I didn't like the last one. I didn't like the last one, so I don't know.
Okay. Well, then take my word for it. You wouldn't like this either. And then just a mere 3 hours ago, 4 hours ago, I just came from the theater and I watched The Long Walk.
Oh.
Which is in contending of being my number one film of the year. It's not really horror, so there's going to be a couple strikes against it. There's some horrific events in it, but I wouldn't call it a Stephen King horror film. It's a Stephen King story, but it's more, God, I'd say like, you know, Shawshank or Stand By Me, that type of thing. It's more of a story of people. And so they're in a horrific environment, or, you know, bad things happen to them. However, Cooper Hoffman, who is Philip Seymour Hoffman's son, is the star of this show. And he was tremendous, but still in the shadows of David Johnson, who, if he doesn't get some sort of Academy Award nod for this performance, I'm going to be furious. And nobody wants that. Nobody wants to make me upset, but he's absolutely wonderful. Plays McVries in this. He's just tremendous. I was captivated every time the kid opened his mouth. So good. But yeah, everybody should go see this movie. I also want to point out, you know, Judy Greer's in it. Mark Hamill's in it, but Charlie Plummer is in it. And I haven't seen him in anything since Spontaneous. He's the boyfriend with the long blonde hair.
Yeah.
Spontaneous. He was in this and he was completely the opposite of what his persona was in Spontaneous. And it was tremendous. I really, really liked this film. So that's it. That seems nice. Like a lot, but yeah, I watched a lot of stuff.
Catherine, did you watch anything new recently?
Yeah. I also saw The Conjuring Last Rites. I did not fall asleep. I liked it more than Joe. I am a fan of this franchise. I did like it better than the last one, which I think just went straight to streaming. Yeah, I mean, it's the same thing, you know. It's got the same tropes. It's got the same moments and beats that all the other Conjuring movies have. You know, so I can understand why people knock it, but, you know, I enjoyed it. It was fun. It was everything I wanted it to be.
Well, that's good.
It was very predictable, but I enjoyed it.
That's good.
I thought it wrapped up the series nicely. And then...
If it wrapped up the series.
It's supposed to be, but yes, I know.
Yeah. It had, like, the highest grossing... opening weekend for a horror film.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's crazy.
Oh, yeah. It was like breaking records for a horror film for an opening weekend. Oh, and wow. So I know they call it Last Rites, but when you've got that type of revenue coming in, I wouldn't be a bit surprised if they're like, oh, let's do another Rites.
The theater, when I saw it, it was pretty packed. Mm-hmm. It was pretty packed. Yeah. So there, I mean, I don't know if they're going to do another Conjuring, but they'll probably just add on another Annabelle or a nun or something, you know, just to throw it into the mix to grab some more money.
Exactly. And then out on Shudder, Dangerous Animals. I did watch that.
Oh, yeah, I've been meaning to watch that.
Shark serial killer movie. And, you know, it was fine. It wasn't bad. It wasn't great. Yeah. It was an interesting idea. That's all I watched in terms of horror movies. We did go to the opening, or is the employee preview of Halloween Horror Nights out here at Universal Studios the other week, and that was pretty cool.
Oh, nice. What was the best maze?
I didn't get to do them all, because it was way too crowded and lines get to be hours long. But of the ones we did, probably Terrifier was my favorite. We did the Terrifier maze. We did Poltergeist. We did, what else? They had a Fallout maze. They did the whole backlot tram tour was set out for Blumhouse.
Yeah. So
there was like the Dark Phone. Yeah. Dark Phone 2.
Black Phone.
Sorry. Yes. I knew that didn't sound right. Black Phone 2, Megan, The Purge. So stuff like that.
Yeah.
It was fun. Definitely recommend checking it out if you're in the area.
Cool. Yeah, I last time I went to that, I was like, it was so much walking around and standing around. It was just by the end of the night, like my feet were falling off of me.
Yes. But I still have a foot that is sore from the other.
It's always fun, though. It's always a fun time.
By the way, The Conjuring domestic is at 130 million, international another 202 million, so worldwide 332 million so far.
That's a lot of money, Joe.
I don't know why.
Well, people love that franchise.
Yeah.
Mark, what have you, anything new you've watched recently?
Yeah, I also watched The Conjuring. I'm in agreement with Joe. It was an absolute bore for me. It was the same old tropes, just like Catherine said, same old. It, like every time they were like building up tension and trying to give you a little scare, it would switch immediately to just something normal, like a ping pong game or just a family, you know, sitting around the table, which I might say that the father of this family, it was pretty annoying. And some of the dumbest dialogue I've ever heard, you like meatloaf or I love meatballs. And it just, some of the dialogue was just atrocious of it. I just didn't find it scary at all. And it, just like Joe said, at the end, it was like a Hallmark ending, and just like all of a sudden, you just saw these people just showing up out of the blue, just to say, "Hey, remember her? Hey, remember her?" And it just ended. It was just not a fun film. I didn't enjoy it at all. But I mean, people love it, and people go see this, obviously. So I mean, you know. You got one thumbs up and two thumbs down, and Matt, you're going to have to tie it or something. You have to go check it out.
I do want to point out one thing that bothered me throughout this film. When they introduce the father, he's coming home from work and he parks his car.
Yeah.
He parks his car facing the wrong way on that wrong side of the street. And they showed him parking that way like three more times throughout the film. And it really bothered me the first time. And then just took me out every single time he did it. Like, just every car on the block is facing the opposite way. Oh, drove me nuts.
There was a lot of stuff that drove me nuts in it. But I did like the
Matt,
boyfriend.
Matt, you're muted.
Oh. Yeah, we had some neighbors who used to park like that. Like they would park backwards on the other side of the street. Yeah.
Yeah.
I did like the boyfriend though. I enjoyed the boyfriend. I thought he was pretty good. But yeah. And I also saw The Long Walk, and I'm in total agreement with Joe. I loved the film.
Did you do the treadmill thing?
Oh God, no. I looked. I couldn't find any of them. I would have beaten it instantly.
It wouldn't be instant.
Well, I would have beaten beaten everybody.
In the film, these kids walked for like almost 300 days straight.
Yeah.
No break for sleeping?
Nope. No.
No break for sleeping, no break for eating, no break for taking a dump or a pee or nothing. No,
they took dumps, Joe.
But not on a break.
Not on a break. And
Mark Hamill's the slave driver.
Yeah. Yeah, but I'm that that Johnson guy, I mean, he is mesmerizing. He's great. Yeah. I think he should be up for a best supporting actor for sure. I think he should. He's that good. But just like, you know, the book, you know, you got 100 people walking down the road. They narrowed it down to 50. And I was just like, I'm fine with that. You know, condense it down so you get to see more of the characters and relate to them and care about them, you know, before they die. But they really didn't like, you know, veer off the road. And because I don't think they wanted to get shot like the novel. They kept it pretty much like the novel. And I really enjoyed that. I had a problem, though, with they didn't have like much crowds like they did in the novel. They had crowds of people and like boys, you know, getting shot in front of the crowds. I wanted to see that. And you don't really get to see that. It's very random. It's very, you know, see a scary woman at a church, you know, and just kids, like two kids. It's just very focused on the teenage boys, which was fine. But they veered off a little bit at the end, and I was completely fine with it. And I'm okay with it. So I really enjoyed it. Highly, highly recommend it. And those are the two films I saw. Matt, what did you see?
I didn't see anything new except for Alien Earth, keeping up on that. And it just keeps getting better and better.
Good.
It's so good.
Yeah.
I love it. Love it. The
sheep.
The sheep with the eye creature, especially as the sheep, is just stealing the show. It's so creepy looking. I think I posted on the group, on the Facebook group, that I could watch a whole episode of him just observing people because he's so creepy, that eye. And
Catherine, are you watching the show, Catherine?
I am not yet. It's on my list. I'm going to get to it eventually. I just haven't had time to just sit down and watch it.
I'm still on episode two. I just can't get to it.
Oh, it's great. Yeah, it's great.
I look forward to this now weekly.
Yeah. No, I'm like, when does it come out? It comes out tomorrow, I guess. Tomorrow evening. So
yeah.
But yeah, definitely. If you have not been checking out Alien Earth, it is really, really strong. And I mean, it might be my favorite alien thing after the first one.
Wow.
Yeah.
I like every episode. I'm just amazed that this is on television.
Yeah.
Like this is movie quality.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. And I do feel like I need to watch the first one or two again, or especially the first one again, because I think there's some things that are being referenced that I'm not remembering now because it's been a couple years since I watched it, and it, you know, I wasn't memorizing things. So I think now if I go back and watch it, there'll be things I'll pick up on, like, oh, you know.
I'm in the same boat because I don't think I was really that into it with episode one. And so I wasn't really paying a whole lot of attention. Had I realized it was going to be this good, I would have been like taking notes on episode one.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Well, you guys did when we did the movie trivia for Alien. Joe, you won.
Yeah. But that was Alien. This is Alien Earth. This is different.
Right.
But you're talking about rewatching Alien, the first one. The first film.
No, the first episode.
Oh, the first episode.
I want to go back and watch the original Alien because I know there's things in that, because that, you know, these are tied together sort of somehow. And so I just don't know if there's anything that I'm missing from that, you know.
I'd be willing that when this series is done to go back and rewatch the entire Alien franchise in the correct order.
Ooh,
that's, I don't know if I could do that, but
I can do that
backwards.
No, not backwards.
Correct order, which not is backwards. Yeah,
God, he's psychopath.
But anyway, check out Alien Earth. It should be high on your list of things to check out immediately. So, and then this weekend, our movie on Halloween night is playing at Hollywood Horror Fest on the 20th. At 3:30, it's in the 3:30 to 5 o'clock time slot, I believe. It's on screen one, so go check that out. If you look up HollywoodHorrorFest.com, they'll have links sending you to where you can get your tickets. So there should be a lot of, there's always, you know, in all these festivals, there's a lot of good shorts to check out in addition to ours too. So. And I guess that's it. So, Joe, with that springly little noise there.
Sprinkly.
Springy little noise. I don't know what that is.
It's not a spring sound.
It sounded like elevator doors shutting really quickly.
Yes.
Yeah, it does. That's actually what it sounded like.
Yeah. Oh, which is a great segue. Joe, tell us about your picks.
So this pick, my pick is inanimate object horror movies. So where the villain is going to be something, you know, that doesn't have a pulse. And we're going to start off with a movie that pushed all the right buttons, in my opinion. It had its ups, it had its downs. We're going to start off with 1983's The Lift, which of course is about a lift or an elevator technician who finds himself drawn into a web of mystery and peril as he investigates the perplexing deadly accidents occurring in the elevator of a new office building. So Matt, why don't you go ahead and take it off on the ground floor?
All right. On the ground floor. Well, my first note is, God damn it, Joe. Okay, so this is the whole premise of this thing, of course, is that there's I guess it's not a haunted elevator, but it's more like a possessed elevator, I guess. Is that the thing?
Yeah.
Kind of.
Yeah.
Got goop in it.
Yeah.
It got some goop in it. That I guess that would be, you know, what do you call it? What would that goop be called? I think I wrote it down.
Living biochips.
Ectoplasm.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Living biochips. No, I think the gunk is ectoplasm, right? Isn't that what they used to call
living
that?
Living biochips.
Well, that's what they called it in Ghostbusters. In Ghostbusters. But this is like,
what about
biochips?
What about in Poltergeist, right? Because they had that gunk that they...
Oh, the pink goo.
Oh,
yeah.
It's in, like, in the bathtub.
Yeah.
It's like ectoplasm. I thought that was like embryo fluid or something.
No, I thought the professor in the film said that it was like living biochips, and they were dying, and then they were.
Oh yeah, well yeah,
I thought it was the green slime from Nickelodeon.
Yeah. I don't know. I may have tuned out what his explanation was at that point.
That was a great scene.
It's not important.
I love he takes the girl out. This guy, by the way, he's a real charmer. The lift operator takes this girl out, and then she has him drop him off. At first, they were supposed to be going home, but she has him drop him off at this industrial park, and he goes, "Do you live here?" And I'm like, "It's obviously offices, you know, who would live there?" Let's see. Someone got really excited about black underwear. Who was it that got really excited about black underwear?
It was the building supervisor.
Oh, that's right.
Who was having an affair with his business partner's wife.
Yeah, that's right. He got very excited. Oh,
you wore black underwear. He's like, yeah, just for you.
Yeah.
Everybody in this movie seems to be either drunk or having an affair with someone, except our hero.
Except for our hero, yeah.
Yeah. But everybody thinks he's cheating.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Well, I mean, he does seem like he's flirting quite a bit with that woman he took out.
It's not just a woman, and he didn't take her out. She's a news reporter. She's investigating.
Right, but there was some flirtatious talk there, you know. I don't know.
He's everybody falls for the elevator repairman guys. He's just naturally charismatic.
That's true. He's like a Don Draper of the building. Yeah, and then the mom slapping her kid right in front
of her. Oh, I loved it. Oh, I loved it so much. Funny. I loved it so much.
Yeah.
It was great.
Oh, yeah. And then our hero, the elevator operator, his wife does accuse him of cheating on her, and he just casually answers the phone. It's like he stares at her for a moment. Like, there's no expression on his face at all. She accuses him of cheating on her, and then he just stares at her for a few seconds, and then
he doesn't stand up for himself to try to prove her wrong or nothing.
No, he doesn't. It's kind of like he's saying, "Well, yeah, I guess you got me there." And then the phone rings, and he just reaches over and says, "Hello." Like it was a conversation that
he's still in my notes.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. I don't remember why I wrote this. The scientist sure was wrong about computer chips. Oh yeah, because he was talking of, that's right. He was talking about the computer chips taking on a life of their own. They're extremely dangerous. Of course, we have the benefit of decades afterwards finding out that that never happened, of course. And then there's a tap dancing janitor. There's a lot of little asides in this movie that
Van Rowan is the tap dancing janitor's name. Yes.
Oh, so great.
One of there's my a favorite. Lot of it was noteworthy. Yeah.
There's little moments in this movie where there's just odd little things happen that don't really have anything to do with the story. It's just a funny little moment. Kind of like when one of the office, a guy working in an office comes walking down a hall. He smacks the butt of one of the ladies cleaning the hall. Spanks her basically. And he's like, "Hey ladies, what?" And then keeps walking. And the other cleaning lady turns around and says, "Well, if you're going to stick it out in traffic, what do you expect?" It's just hilarious. And then of course at some point, whatever this goop is, by the way, one of the characters, his name is Speakerman.
Yes.
Yeah. His name was Speakerman.
Yes.
But the elevator guy, the mechanic, he just sticks his fingers into the ectoplasm at one point too. I'm like, why would you just stick your hands into that gook? I did think that the last bit in the elevator shaft was relatively suspenseful. You know, that last bit there was cut pretty well. And I think it was kind of, suspenseful. So, but this was not a good movie, but, I had fun with it. It was kind of,
and yet it was a great movie.
In a way it was a great movie. Yeah. I would love to see a Riff Tracks version of this. But the problem is that this, well, I guess they do movies that are just themselves are funny too, I suppose, in how bad they are. But this one almost seems like it's leaning into its campiness a bit much and you know, with the tap dancing janitor and that kind of thing. But I have a feeling the Riff Tracks guys could have a lot of fun with this one.
Catherine, what did you think? Or were you done, Matt?
Yeah, I was done.
Okay. Catherine, you're up.
Like an elevator, this movie was all over the place.
What? Up or down?
But yeah, it's a Dutch movie. And I don't think that the dubbing was bad per se, but the translation was just awful. I feel like some of the stuff was just super awkward and clunky.
Yeah.
Maybe that's part of the problem.
Yeah, there was the dubbing sometimes almost seemed like they were, it made sense to the words, but then other times it was way off. There were some lines that like it was obvious that what was being said verbally, or you know, the sound didn't match the lip movement.
Yeah. One line early on is like, oh, some good foreshadowing here with these damn machines will be the death of us all someday. I always love when they kind of
damn dirty apes
telegraph what's going to happen next. I love the family, those kids, the questions that the kids ask at the kitchen table were just hilarious. And then at one point, the mom's getting mad at the little boy. No reading at the table. Save that for school. It's like, what mom ever got mad at a kid for reading at the dinner?
Yeah. There was wasn't there something the kid asked about? Something awkward at the table, right? Something,
breasts. I feel like
it's sexual in nature.
Breasts. Exactly.
Breasts. Right.
Yeah.
Yes, that's what it was. Mommy, when do I get breasts?
Hey, you sent us that clip.
I was just thinking about that. Yeah, I think I did. I could probably play it.
And then, yeah, just echoing what Matt said, there's some, you know, the movie knows it's trying to be funny in places. It's got some good humor going on. One thing I particularly liked was Mr. Fink. He was this blind man trying to buy an apartment. And the guy he's buying the apartment from is describing the wonderful view from the apartment.
It was like a Monty Python scene.
Right?
Yeah. My note was, God, it must be really easy to sell an apartment with a view to a blind man.
To a blind man, right?
Yeah.
So stuff like that. It's got a lot of those little moments, which are just like, wait, what?
Is this movie actually for his mother.
Captain, did you notice like when the blind man was signing on the pages, the second one he hit that line, he completely missed the paper and just wrote on the dresser. Yeah.
So that was a good moment. I like that. But yeah, I'm glad we watched it. It was silly. It was kind of fun. I love the idea of a possessed elevator. So
yeah,
it was a fun one.
All right, Mark.
Okay, besides the atrocious, hilarious dubbing and the perfect nonsensical dialogue, I mean, at the end, when the repairman Felix and at the end of the film starts to find a way to kill the computer chip in the elevator shaft, I mean, I was quite impressed with the tension it had, just like Matt said. I thought it was really well done because there was no dialogue. There was nothing to make it funny. It actually made it actually suspenseful a little bit. Like the direction of how the director was doing it. I mean, just having just this guy in an elevator shaft fighting an elevator, it was done really quite well. But that's being compared to what we've seen throughout the whole entire like beginning and middle of the film. So I was quite impressed with that. And after watching the movie with the horrendous dubbing and acting, I thought it was just like a breath of fresh air. I'm glad like I'm pretty much the last one because I knew like Matt was going to get all the one-liners, but one of my favorites was that Matt didn't say was when Felix was in the lunchroom and Speakerman says, I got a date with the blonde in the administration. They say she shaves down there below. Oh, it grows that fast, huh? Like, what? What? I died. That was great. I freaking loved that. I love the dinner scene where the wife confronts Felix about cheating on her, and obviously the mother told the daughter to ask her father, what's adultery? So, like, I mean, what the hell? I mean, she's using her children to start a fight or confront your husband at the dinner table. It's crazy. But the best part is Felix, you know, had zero reaction to all this. None. He just picks up the phone and says, hello. It doesn't even fight it. Doesn't even, it's like the guy doesn't even care. She's sobbing in the kitchen, threw down a plate, and he just nonchalantly just gets up, grabs some phone. Hello. Yeah. Oh, university. Oh, well, I'm kind of busy right now. All right, I guess I'll go.
That was university on the phone.
and I mean, and the ending, I mean, with the president of the computer chip factory, you know, just he gets hung. And so what? That's it? The end? They just start walking down the stairs. It's like, obviously, the elevator's not dead. The possession's still there. And they're just said, ah, fuck it. Just hold each other up and just walk down the stairs and the end. That's it. What a great film. What a great film. This is my favorite out of the three. It really was. I had a blast with this.
Okay. I think there's some key points you guys skipped over that we did not discuss. And let's start right at the beginning. That opening scene with the restaurant at the top of the building. Two businessmen and their escorts for the evening, and they take the elevator on their way down, and then the elevator gets stuck, and they start breaking into an orgy pretty much in the middle of this overheated elevator.
Yeah, yeah.
And you got one girl who's got her top completely off, and the other one's about ready to throw up because she's all hot and had just eaten a bunch of oysters. It was like my first note was, that is a dinner party I wish I was invited to.
Jesus, Joe.
Let's see. Oh, the scene at the breakfast table the next morning when the dad's trying to read his newspaper or something, and his son is next to him pouring salt in his tea and thinking that his dad doesn't notice. And then he gets up and the boy walks away from the table, and the dad's smart enough to switch the glasses. I thought was hilarious. The one analogy that I have for this movie is, this guy is an elevator repairman, but they treat him like a rogue detective who's on the edge.
Yeah.
You know, like, get off. You're getting off that elevator case. You know, it's like the commissioner's going to haul him into his office and, you know, give him what for. Take his badge and gun away from him. That's the part I thought was hilarious. Then we've got. I know we eventually do get to bumbling policemen, but we are chock full of bumbling security guards right off the bat in this film. And then I think it was the security guard. One of his partner, like, gets his head stuck in the elevator, and he's telling his partner to call 911 or call. He seems to take his own leisurely time doing it. Like, he's not really interested in it at all.
And then there's a paper mache head that pops off too.
Yes. Yeah. Sure. Let's see. I've never seen a reporter that smokes her cigarettes with a holder. That was a new one for me in the car when she gets dropped off at the, I don't know, whatever, I guess where her office was, but
it was very elegant.
The superintendent's had a mistress. Oh, and So his business partner, whose wife that he's screwing, who wears the black underwear, she was there visiting, but had to bring their daughter with them.
Yeah.
And they just have her play with her doll in front of the elevators.
Yeah.
And when, you know, all that happened was the girl broke her doll's head, got crushed in the elevator. And so the mom, when she comes out, smacks the daylights out of this girl right in the face. It was completely unwarranted.
I actually liked that one scene with the little girl with the elevators playing with her, like toying with her and all that. It. That was cool.
Yeah, that was cool.
And then, you know, it's a sad ending because it's kind of like a Dr. Frankenstein having to kill his own monster type of thing. You know, you got the mad scientist who has to shoot the goop with a Ruger. And that was a tear-jerking ending. I loved this. I will watch this movie again.
Yeah.
And if you're listening at home and you have not seen it, please do yourself a favor and watch it.
Yeah, that's great.
All right, so we're going to go from elevators to laundry machines. So we're going to go to 1995's The Mangler. This is a Tobe Hooper film with Robert Englund and starring, in air quotes, Ted Levine, who you might know as Buffalo Bill from Silence of the Lambs. So this movie is about a laundry folding machine that's been possessed by a demon, causing it to develop homicidal tendencies. So we're going to go right to the spin cycle with Mark.
Yeah, it's obviously that Tobe Hooper did not direct Poltergeist, like I've said before. He did not direct Poltergeist after watching The Mangler. He's just got a different style. He's got a different style. And it's a great style, but it's just not Poltergeist. It's just not. It's just more proof. But what a ride. I mean, this felt like I was watching a 1989's Tim Burton's Batman, where Detective Eckhart had a spin-off adventure and faced off toe-to-toe with one of those like D-minus villains in like a one-off comic book. Because, I mean, that's what Ted Levine seemed to base his character on. He sounded and dressed like him and talked like him. I never thought in all my life I would see demonic. Thank you. Oh, shit. A demonic. God damn it.
Hi, Mark.
Oh, hi. Poe says an ice box. I'm just going to, that's the last time I'm saying that word. Thank you, Joe. Sure. I mean, there's a slew of adaptations of Stephen King short stories. Bad ones and good ones. Bad ones like The Lawnmower Man and Sleepwalkers and Maximum Overdrive. Well, The Mangler definitely fits in this category. And that's what hits differently, though, because I think of Ted Levine in it. Because he just took this movie and ran with it. And every single like thing he said, like, even if you couldn't understand, because you couldn't understand like half the words he was saying, because he was just like this mumble garble like stuff. It was just so fun to listen to. And then with the scenes between Robert Englund and Ted, it was just pure gold. Robert Englund, you know, I think he's a fine actor. I don't know what he was doing here. I mean, he was like half Freddy Krueger voice, half... what was that one film? Like, he had a patch on too, I think, on his eye. It was like 1000 Maniacs or something like that. Remember that one?
No.
Like, he's in a film and he's like, he plays this Southern Baptist guy with the patch on his eye or something. And same, it's almost the same costume, but just in white. But
what a story, Mark.
Yeah, what a story. but I don't know. I just Robert Englund. I mean, it was just too hammy for me. I don't know, him doing the dance and all that. I'm gonna do a dance, and I'm just like, oh, enough. The kills were okay, standard 1990s kills. Unfortunately, all the kills were pretty much, you know, just body crushing. But it was just like, what's the deal with these antacids? Like, people just needed antacids and like reaching for it. Like, grab a stick, man. Turn it off. Turn the machine off before you grab those pills and before your arm gets dragged in there. That drove me crazy. But I loved all the set designs, very gothic, steams, the fog. Fun fact, Stephen King worked at a laundry press factory, and that's where he got the idea for this story. And when he was a teenager, I guess. And for a shout out to the machine. It looked like a typewriter, in my opinion, but I just kind of love the fact that it became like animatronic and actually start moving. I mean, just went completely off the deep end when it started moving, and that was just a lot of fun. But Ted Levine just killed it in this. He was so much fun to watch.
All right.
That's it.
Catherine, what did you think?
Well, I went into this expecting it to just be awful. And I was like, oh, okay, it wasn't as bad as I expected. Usually Stephen King adaptations aren't great, but But this one was kind of fun for what it was. As soon as you start the movie, you know, it's got the sign there. I don't remember what the name of the town is, but it's in Maine. So you automatically know it's a Stephen King adaptation. When you see the machine for the first time, it says Hadley Watson on it. And I was like, oh, I wonder if that means anything. And then I looked at the trivia on the movie afterwards, and Hadley and Watson each have 6 letters. And then there's also a big 6 on the machine. So you get 666.
Well, and Hadley was one. Wasn't Hadley one of the Shawshank Redemption guards?
Oh, that could be too.
Oh, I didn't catch that.
One other kind of fun trivia thing. Jim Cummings, who is best known for being kind of the modern voice of Winnie the Pooh, is the voice of the machine, so he does all those machine sounds. And I
poor Winnie the Pooh? Winnie the Pooh's voice did that?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, bother. Yeah,
so Clancy Brown was officer or Captain Hadley.
Okay.
He was the one, the like, in charge of everybody.
Well, that's, there you go.
Oh, bother.
I knew there had to be some meaning to the name. I actually enjoyed watching Robert Englund chewing the scenery in this movie. It's fun watching him, you know, he's so over the top, and then you get Ted Levine that is so just a little more grounded in his acting style. So it was kind of fun watching those two. Yeah. When they go to the morgue, how many steps does it take to get to the morgue? It was like this never ending downward staircase. And then the laundry also had this massive downstairs staircase too. I'm like, how inconvenient is this? How many stairs does it take to get wherever you're going?
That staircase reminded me of Tales from the Crypt. Right?
It was just so impractical. But yeah, it was fun. Yeah, I enjoyed watching the kills were kind of just brutal enough. Lots of blood on the white sheets and stuff. But yeah. This was a fun one. I mean, I'm glad we watched this one. I didn't know this was a movie that existed, and it was a fun watch.
All right, Matt, you're up.
I love the guy who is sort of the floor manager or whatever. He has one tone of voice, and it's complete asshole. I'm talking to you. You! He's yelling. That's like the first lines we hear from him at the beginning. I'm like, how you know, it seems like this laundry job is kind of dire, you know, to this guy. Like, there's, you know, what's going to be missed out if they are a little slow on cleaning the laundry here. Life's a bitch and then you die. That was one of Robert Englund's lines, and by 1995, when this came out, that line was already a massive cliche, so I'm not sure why they incorporated that in there. Yeah, does this boss have another tone of voice? You'd think that laundry cleaners was the most important work in the world. Let's see. And there were a lot of workers there too, and I'm not sure what all of them were doing. They all just seemed to be milling about. And then the police photographer looked like he was from 1940. I'm like, wait, what year is this set in?
Old age makeup was so bad on him.
Oh yeah, all of them. The old age I'll get to that, but it looks like summer when they're outside, but this cop, you know, he's walking around, Ted Levine is walking around with a giant wool overcoat on, like in the, and I'm like, I get you want the detective look, but give him a raincoat at least, not some like a winter coat. I did a little research and I can't find a mangler that's that big, like that, that industrial size mangle seems a little bit too big for what it's supposed to do. But I guess this is a special one.
We got the extra big one.
Yeah. The hippie. I noticed the hippie asked if the yogurt was whole wheat.
Oh,
what the hell? So, you know, Joe, how evil villains in these movies need to have a weird scar or some kind of disability like that? Well,
yes, they do.
Robert Englund has a glass eye, two crippled legs, a missing finger, a cauliflower ear, and a gurgling throat plug. So I guess he covers all the evil.
He's the most evil.
He was becoming the Mangler.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I guess.
He was mostly machine.
Yeah. And there's some really borderline old man makeup in this. It's really bad. Not even borderline. It's just terrible makeup. Or the lighting on it is not doing it any favors either, but it's bad makeup. And then it does seem like a dangerous object that would be fairly easy to avoid, you know, like, I can understand if someone was shoving people into the Mangler to do the sacrifice,
right,
or whatever, but it seems like,
yeah, it's like these Jaws, these just don't go in the water.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. But even worse, you know, I mean, like, you know, you've seen people getting eaten by this. Why are you standing so close? And if you drop something in it, please don't keep reaching for it. Like, this thing's going to rip you apart. And then one of the things that Robert Englund's character says is, or no, somebody says, I can't remember now who, beware people with missing limbs. Like, okay, does that mean that they're evil? What is going on here? And then towards the end, it seems like the 16-year-old niece who's now running the plant?
Yes.
Yes.
Well, and then the cop was asking her out.
Right.
Until he saw what she had become.
Right.
Right. But I mean, she probably, he knew she was 16 all along.
Because you waved to her.
Well, I don't know that he was asking her out. I think he was just trying to see if she was okay.
Yeah.
Just because you're bringing some woman flowers, she just got out of the hospital.
It felt like a romantic gesture to me.
Yeah.
I know. He changed his clothes and he had a different look. And,
and
maybe he was, but
he gussied up and
was clean. Finally took a shower. Yeah.
Exactly. This one. I don't think I had as much fun with this one as The Lift. But, you know, for a bad movie, it was entertaining enough, I guess.
I hated this movie.
I didn't hate it.
I had to watch it in two sittings because I just couldn't sit through it any longer. The Mangler itself, the machine, the design of it, I thought was pretty cool. That's kind of where my cool list ends.
I think I thought a lot of the look of this, like the factory itself and all that kind of stuff and the way it was shot and everything looked pretty good. It's just the dumbest story of all time.
Yeah. I mean, they shot this, I guess, in South Africa. And I like the exterior shots. It made it look like it was desolate and, you know, unreachable and, you know, almost abandoned. That part was kind of cool. But that's, again, where it ends. I really did not understand after Ted Levine goes and does his investigation at the laundry facility where the first murder happened. Then he goes home that night and he's sitting next to his, I'm guessing, ex-brother-in-law who's grilling steaks outside. But like the whole, it's like not a house in sight. I thought maybe they were camping, but there's all these like lights that he's put up in the trees and it's real hippie. And there's like a little footbridge you have to go over. It's like we were going into the Shire. Yeah. I didn't understand where the motivation for all that was coming from. And thank God though, his ex-brother-in-law happens to be a huge resource for knowledge of the occult and exorcisms because, as we find out, that's what he performs. Ted Levine comes back to the laundry and the same women are there. And it's like, they've got 16 or 18 hour long shifts. It's like those women were never allowed to leave unless they got a limb ripped off of them.
Yeah.
I did look it up. Harrington Falung is the guy that wrote the score for this. And he's terrible. This did not do anything for the mood or the setting. I never understood. So these guys are taking this old ice box out of there, and which they accidentally bump a woman and she falls into the laundry facility. But then they keep delivering this old ice box to somebody, and to come to find out that now the ice box is possessed.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But does that mean that when the ice box was being, or as I should say, when Ted Levine was kicking the shit out of it with a mallet or something, does that mean that the Mangler wasn't possessed then?
No.
Or do
no,
we have two both, demons?
It was two demons, because when she cut her hand and it hit, you know, she like flung, you know, her blood, whatever, on the Mangler, that big burst happened and they were carrying the ice box right next to it. So it also caught that demon like possession. That's so how it happened.
Split off into two.
Correct.
Okay, well, that solves everything. Now I like that.
it's stupid, that's what happened.
And speaking of stupid, when Ted Levine gets his wool full-length coat caught in the Mangler and it's pulling him in, he takes his gun out and starts shooting the laundry machine instead of doing the smart thing and just simply taking the coat off. But I'm sure he probably needed it for the next scene.
It makes perfect sense.
The sound, I think the sound was my biggest problem with this, because not only was the score bad, but the sound design was bad, because it either went from I can barely hear it, like I need to put closed captions on, to blaringly loud shaking my
house. That's true.
And speaking of which, Ted Levine is the exact same way. He's got two volumes. It's grumbling or yelling.
Yes.
It's great. And
I don't know. It's like every scene he was mad.
Yeah.
Every single scene he was yelling and screaming at somebody like the world was against him. He was way too over the top.
One fantastic.
Of the worst movies I've seen. And again, like Mark, I'm not kidding. I have all of these notes that say it's movies like this and Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 that make me firmly believe that Toby Hooper had absolutely nothing to do with Poltergeist.
I swear to you, I'm glad you're coming around.
I see nothing about Poltergeist in this, but I see plenty of Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2. And this, I also wrote down Toby Hooper was removed from at least two other major films where he was replaced by another director, The Dark in 1979 and Venom in 1981. So anyway, I don't even understand the ending of this film was, I don't understand it. I have a college degree. I'm a learned man. I've done tons of research. The ending, I have no idea what I watched. Somehow this Mangler demon follow them into the sewers, and then something dropped out of a manhole into the water, and then all of a sudden everything's fine.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense.
Can somebody explain to me how they finally defeated the Mangler? Although I guess they didn't,
because there's a Mangler too.
Yeah. Well, no, the Mangler 2 is not really even related to this one. I think they just gave
it's not.
Mangler demon is still there because Robert Englund's niece is now taking over.
Right. Yeah.
So, I do love the scene when the niece has been taken to the hospital and Ted Levine wants to go check on her, and the doctor stops him and says, "Can you tell me what, or would you mind telling me what happened?" And Ted Levine says, "No." And I think that pissed off the doctor, because then Ted Levine asked the doctor, "Can I see her?" He's like, "No, not for a couple of days." You know, like if he had just told him what happened, the doctor would have let him right in. But because he was being a dick, it's like, "No, now you got to wait 2 days and I'm the doctor and there's nothing you can do about it." So, but yeah, Matt, I'm with you. I had the same note at the end when Johnny returns to the Blue Ribbon Laundry and the niece has taken over, everything is back the same way it was. I was waiting for Johnny or Ted Levine to look deadpan into the camera and say, "Well, here we go again."
Yeah.
It was wasn't so that campy, but man.
So bad.
I wasn't that bad, Joe.
Okay. I'm done with it. This is what I would cite as an example of a Stephen King adaptation gone horribly wrong in comparison to The Long Walk, where it went completely Correct.
Well, here's the question, Joe. Do you think that the Mangler is worse than Sleepwalkers?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
Oh, wow.
And I think the Mangler is worse than Dreamcatcher.
No, I don't know. I think
I don't know about Dreamcatcher.
I kind of like that. It's got Oliphant in it. Yeah, Oliphant.
Yeah.
And they killed him off too early.
Timothy Oliphant, by the way, is really good in Alien Earth, by the way. He's great in that.
Here we go with Alien Earth again. I got to get on this
everything,
call, man.
Even that stupid Levi's commercial with Beyonce. Where he had,
I don't think I've seen that.
He loses her. It's like every movie that I go see that play that commercial as in the trailers. Like Beyonce comes in, she's all country western now, and she plays him in pool and beats him. Mm-hmm. And so her prize is she gets to take his jeans. And then he's got the
perfect hair. He's just a gorgeous man.
Yeah. Yeah.
God damn it. He's perfect.
All right. Okay. We're going to move on to the last film of the evening. Oculus.
It seems to me like you're an expert, Mark.
I am an expert on Timothy Oliphant.
So we're going to watch Oculus from 2013 with Karen Gillan. And I don't know, there really wasn't anybody else of note in that. But I will say it's a Mike Flanagan film. And I have a tendency, like, if a movie's really bad, I will write hundreds of notes. But if a movie's really good, I find myself just getting too wrapped into it and I don't write a single thing.
Yeah.
So I only have a couple. But Catherine, why don't you start us off with this one?
I am in the same boat. I also don't have very much written down. This is a movie I could have sworn I saw when it came out. But then watching it the other day, I didn't remember any of it. So it was new to me. But I love Mike Flanagan. I think he's a fabulous director. I love just about everything he's done. And I believe this was his first like major movie. But it's great. I really enjoy it. I enjoy the characters. I thought the actors did a fantastic job. The story is interesting. You know, you've got this old mirror and everybody that owns it dies or kills somebody in a really horrific way. So kind of unraveling that mystery and the main lady in this one, just how she is so sure she has found the way to prove to the world that there is something wrong with this mirror. And she's got, you know, all of her timers set and, you know, we're going to do this at this time and this at this time. And here's this fail safe for this. Although I will say it was interesting. All the timers sounded exactly the same. So we were kind of confused as, well, which one, how do you know which timer is for what?
Yeah.
But it's interesting. It plays a lot with, you know, perception and, you know, what's real, what's imaginary, what's all in their head. Again, we get some really gross fingernail horror in this, which always. Ugh.
Oh, the staple remover.
It's so bad. It's so bad. I hate fingernail shit.
And then one of my favorite moments in this was the main character thinks she's eating an apple and it turns out to be a light bulb. But is it really a light bulb or did she really eat the apple?
Yeah. I immediately started thinking of the Lost Boys. Like, you're eating maggots, Michael. Maggots. You're eating maggots.
Right,
like,
right.
No, I was eating glass and now it's an apple. Oh, it was so terrible watching that.
Yeah. But it's got some really nice moments like that. But yeah, I found it really compelling. I didn't write a lot of notes because I was so engaged in the story.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good one.
Mark, what'd you think?
Well, how refreshing to have an intelligent lead knowing and fully aware of what she's getting into with the supernatural with smart preparations. How refreshing was that? I mean, she was just on the mark, just going. We have water, time to drink. Eat that apple, time to nourish yourself because people were starving and all that. Mm-hmm. You know, dogs aren't eating, had the dog there. I mean, it was refreshing to see that. And especially like when, quote unquote, you know, having a loaded gun to its head. I mean, using one of those foul safe anchor attached to the ceiling and all that. I mean, like a safety. It's on a timer. I mean, genius. I want her to be like, I want to be with that final girl because that's a smart woman right there. And I believe with all those alarms that were like going up, she did pick up each alarm and look, and it would say what to do.
Oh, okay.
Like there would, she had labels on there. So good. I'm telling you, Catherine, she's a smart woman. She's a smart woman. And I just love just, you know, the transitions between the past and the present and how it just interweaved it back and forth so seamlessly when, you know, all of a sudden, you know, the boy's looking at his older self, but it, you know, he's not seeing it, but he knows there's a presence there and he's staring at the boy. It was just so masterfully done. By the way, this is the first time I've ever seen this film. And what a gem. I can't believe I missed this. Matt, have you seen this film before?
Yeah, I saw it. I mentioned last time I'd seen this one before.
Oh, okay. So anyways, I freaking loved it. I guess what was just so fascinating is like how, you know, prepared, you know, she was, is that how I just loved how like the evil and the force was just moving and moving it like in through like the whole entire house, and she had plants and like the plants were dying and whatnot. I mean, it was great, like kind of like poltergeist kind of feel. It was just like someone actually prepared going into this, and I just, what a horrendous ending for this young man. I mean, it was a Debbie Downer, but I loved that it happened that way. You know, the Eden Lake ending was just completely depressing for me. This wasn't as depressing. I'm just going, wow, that was just a well done movie. And yeah, fantastic, Joe. It's a good one. It's a really good one.
All right, Matt, what'd you think?
Yeah, I like this one. I remember seeing this, I think, back 2015, something like that. Michelle and I watched it on streaming or something and rented it, maybe. I don't remember now, but I really liked this, and I like Karen Gillan. She was, well, obviously she's been in who did she play in the Marvel movies?
She was in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, and she was in all those Endgame and all that.
Who was she in?
She played the blue one.
That's her?
Yeah, she was in the blue whatever machine, whatever she was. And she's I think she's really good. And she's Scottish.
Nebula,
that's right. And she's Scottish, and she's got a pretty thick Scottish accent when you hear her actually speaking, and her American accent is pretty good. And of course, she was where I first came across her was as Amy Pond in Doctor Who with David Tennant, Matt Smith. And she was great in that too. I really liked her as the companion. So, but anyway, this movie, I think it has some really good creepy moments. It's got some time stuff happening, not necessarily time travel, but in terms of like time jumps that
It was two different timelines.
Right. Yeah.
You know, they kept jumping back from when the kids were young and then present
right.
time.
But I meant like, you know, they would, you know, they'd be doing something one moment and then realize time had passed and they hadn't realized it. Oh, you know, that's what I meant. And yeah, it does seamlessly tie into the events. It kind of had this sort of like, you know, it was almost so choreographed in the way that the story was edited together and wrapped around, you know, from the earlier story to this story and then what was real and what was not. It was kind of hard to, it had a little bit of, it's a Christopher Nolan movie with the dream, you know, go into a dream and a dream.
Inception.
Yeah, it's a sort of not, I mean, it's not the same thing as Inception, but it's a similar in that you're not sure what's real and what's not and where they are and everything. So I really liked it. I thought the mom was pretty creepy when she really got, you know, messed up and chained up in the bedroom and everything that way. And she going crazy wild, going after the kids and everything. I thought it was just really well done. And yeah, that ending it's not at all a happy ending. It's a pretty, you know, stressful ending. So I think that may be why a lot of, you know, it's just, it, I don't know why it didn't go bigger than it was. It was critically acclaimed when it came out. And I didn't, when I first saw it, I didn't know who Mike Flanagan was until The Haunting of Hill House came out. So, but this is a really good, I really need to go back and check out the rest of his early movies, because there, I know I saw Hush, and you know, obviously Gerald's Game and all of that. Hush is great. But also Ouija Origin of Evil was a pretty good entry. I mean, it was a sequel, but it was way better than the first one, and it wasn't bad. He directed that, and then he's got one called Absentia, and I have not seen that one. It is playing on Amazon Prime. And then another one called Before I Wake.
Yeah, I've never heard of that one either.
And I hadn't seen that either, and that's on Netflix actually. So,
but The Conjuring, The Last Rites.
What'd you say, Joe?
So did you watch Life of Chuck yet?
No.
I have.
No.
It's wonderful.
Oh, yeah. He directed Life of Chuck, obviously. Yeah. And then, of course, his Netflix shows, Fall of House of Usher, was good. Midnight Mass I didn't like as much, but Haunting of Hill House and Haunting of Bly Manor I thought were really good, especially Haunting of Hill House. So anyway, this was a good movie. And I think it's one that it's almost, you know, almost like a ghost haunting thing, but it's really almost more a possession thing and then a time thing. It's got a lot of subgenres kind of mixed up in it. So good movie.
I was a little confused at the beginning with the two different timelines. I didn't realize at the beginning that they were the same people. But once I figured that all out, everything made sense. And I loved that scene where, like, Mark, what you were talking about, where Karen Gillan's like going around the room, pretty much explaining all of the precautions or booby traps or whatever you want to call it. I thought that was great. Matt, I also agree that when the mom finally gets possessed and starts going after the kids, I was getting really big Evil Dead Rise vibes off of her. I thought she was phenomenal.
I didn't really care. Mom,
yeah,
Actually, Michelle said the same thing. She was like, "Is that the mom from Evil Dead Rise?" And I was like, "No, I don't. That's not the same person." But yeah, she did.
Definitely looks the same.
It was very similar.
Yeah, I did not really at the beginning of the film care for the dad. I didn't think, you know, when he was good dad, that he had a whole lot of chemistry with his wife. But he played Evil Dad really, really well, and he was really creepy, and I liked him at that. So. Yeah, that was a fantastic little gem. And I couldn't stand it when he calls his kids Champ and Princess. Like, some dads are really phoning it in. So anyway, that was our last inanimate object movie. So Matt, we're back to you.
All right. Well, next time we have, we have a special episode. We are going to have Jimmy back on the show. We're going to have Mark, obviously, back on the show, Joe and me, and maybe a couple. I would love to try and get the friend of the show, Brian, on with us. And
the
we
bat
are
boy.
Going, huh?
The Bat Boy.
The Bat Boy, yeah. And we're going to have a little celebration of our fifth year anniversary. 5 years, Joe. Can you believe that? That's 100. How many episodes? 128? This will be 29, maybe?
Yeah, I think you're right.
It should be 130.
Is it 100? Oh. Is this 130?
No. No, this is 129.
Yeah. Okay, but the next one will be 130.
Oh, that one will be 130?
I believe so.
Actually, let me look it up. Yeah. No, this one is 130. This one's 130.
This one is 130?
Yeah.
Okay.
31.
So yeah, we did.
So we've. This is the last of our 5 years. Now we're on to the next 5 years.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. So. I don't know. I get, you know, who
knows? I didn't think we were going to do 5 episodes, let alone 5 years.
That's true.
Dear Lord.
So we don't have anything planned. We've got a couple things planned.
What are you talking about?
We have a trivia thing planned.
Working hard on it.
For sure.
I thought the whole show was going to be nothing but Mark just trying to explain the rules.
I have a set of rules. I have a set of rules, but it's very easy to understand.
Mm. Yeah.
Very easy.
Just like the Stephen King.
It's a different kind of trivia.
Yeah.
It's a different kind of trivia.
What's as in, what do you mean? I guess we'll find out.
Yeah, no, we can't do it. We're at 114.
Okay.
I'm going to make some pigs in a blanket to celebrate. Yeah.
I'll wear my pigs in a blanket shirt.
Deep dive.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's one of those things where I guess we'll see what happens.
Oh, my God.
Oh, like every episode.
Yeah.
Here we go again.
All right. So go to www.cinescarehorror.com. Joe's got, I think, at least one new design on a t-shirt in there that is super cool. I haven't gotten it yet. I need to get that one. I would love to have JansCon 2025 or Jansapalooza, whatever it is you want
I'll
to
see
do,
what
Joe.
I can do.
That would be pretty cool.
And if I ever see a t-shirt with me holding a bag at a grocery store, bagging groceries, I'm gonna lose my mind.
That would be funny. Yeah.
No.
That's him fishing for you to do that, Joe.
Yeah.
No, it's not.
With my face on it.
Yeah. I would absolutely hate that if you did that.
It would be the best selling damn shirt in the world.
I really hate it if you gave me $100.
Yeah.
Oh, hi, Mark.
All right, so
yeah, there were no jokes during the Mangler that you guys are talking about with the Mark. There were so many lines. Shut up, Mark.
Yeah,
during actually, the Mangler,
there were a few.
Yeah, I was like,
all
oh shit,
by Ted Levine.
Yeah,
I know.
Yeah. I really hate it if you guys would just compliment me for the next hour.
Yeah.
Yeah,
tell everybody about my finer points.
Well, what's going to happen? Like, you know, this next episode, this isn't going to be just making fun of Mark all episode, is it?
In a few minutes, bitch.
Okay, and in
I don't know, Mark.
Weeks?
You're kind of running the trivia, so I don't really know what's going on.
So we'll have to see what kind of mess you make.
It's not going to be a mess. It's going to be a masterpiece. All right.
We don't have any homework, right?
No homework. We don't have anything planned to watch. Woo-hoo! But if we think of something in the meantime, we could
like Christmas break.
Yeah,
no
little
class.
Break. No, yeah, like school in summer.
No
all right,
class.
I guess we will see you next time.
Good night
everybody.
Good night.
See anything you like?
Have you all got amnesia? They just cheated us.
There was a shark.
Little pig, let's come in.
We all go a little mad sometimes.
What was living behind that boy's eyes was purely and simply evil.
I'm just gonna bash your brains.
You're senseless,
Dynamic.